I wanted to introduce Ali to you. Ali, we're so pleased that you were able to come and talk to us. It's so brilliant of you. I first heard Ali talking on Claire Balding's Radio 4 programme, Ramblings, and I was just so inspired because there's so many people, and I know they have to do it, and we have to do it, but talking about, oh, you have to be careful, and you have to be careful, and you have to be careful. And Ali just gave the impression she wasn't talking to other people about herself, that she was just going to stay walking with her umbrella. Whatever happened, she was going to make it work. And it was just so inspiring to hear someone else feel like that. Yeah, Ali's the proud owner of the walking hub in Kington. She returned to the UK from the States a few years ago, and walking is now her livelihood. In this meeting, we'll interview her about the benefits and challenges when walking with inflammatory arthritis. Ali actually teaches Nordic walking, so which I'm very keen to go and learn from her. So over to you, Ali.
Right. Hello. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, honestly, for having me on. I've never done this kind of thing before. I didn't know this group existed. I didn't know about NRAS because I have been in the States for a long time. I was just telling Katie about that too. I talk about movement and exercise all the time, every day, all day long to my customers in the shop, but I've never talked to a group of fellow RA sufferers. So this is all very interesting, and hopefully, I don't know, hopefully I'll have something good to say and it'll be somewhat inspiring. But yes, anyway, that's the little thank you. So a little bit about me. I'm 57 years old now, and I was diagnosed with RA when I was 30, about 30. It was a couple of years after my son was born, and I guess that's quite typical for women with a big hormone shift to be diagnosed after that. So I've lived with it for quite a long time. So I've had plenty of time to hopefully build up a little bit of wisdom and figure out how to handle this thing that I've got. I grew up in London. I've always been really outdoorsy. I met my husband to be in a I was a big climber. I got into climbing pretty early on, and spent summers out in Chamonix climbing, and did lots of walking, and met my future husband in a climbing and skiing shop in London, who was American. Went over to visit him, just for a visit, and ended up staying there for 30 years. And then, I think it's almost 7 years ago now. I can't believe it's been that long. I totally shook my life up, turned it upside down. I knew I always wanted to come back here anyway. I never chose to go over to the States particularly. It just sort of happened. But I made the big sort of a leap of faith and decided to come back to this country. Complete open book, didn't have any idea of what I was going to do. I just decided I wanted to be back here. And my life for the last 7 years has been this absolutely sort of massive grand adventure, really. And that's really brought me to this position where I can talk to all of you guys. I just can't believe all the things that keep on happening to me. It's just this sort of this energy that's got built up that just keeps on offering more things. I just sort of open myself up to the universe, really, and everything just keeps on flooding in all these amazing opportunities. So I came, like I said, I came back here without any kind of idea of what I was going to do, and ended up very randomly in Kington on the border of Herefordshire and Wales, the most amazing, beautiful place ever. I feel so blessed to live here. Fantastic community. I feel like I found a little family here, because I ended up leaving my husband to do this. We'd sort of gone our different ways. in life, and I really wanted to come back here, and I guess it was my passion and not his in the end. It turned out it wasn't his. And I have a son, and he's over in the States as well. So all at once, I sort of shifted everything in my life, my profession. Oh, I was a nurse. That's kind of a big key factor here as well. I was a nurse for about 30 years, worked in the US. I have a US license. I think I'm still qualified. I'm not sure. I think I've decided not to renew my license this year. I worked in a community health as a home care nurse, and in the emergency room, and latterly in research in chronic fatigue syndrome and ME, which is a very interesting part of medicine to be in. I learned so much from that. And anyway, I fast forward, I came back here and couldn't nurse because I had a US degree, and it wasn't reciprocal without doing all this stuff. So I ended up just buying this place in Kington just because I needed to sort of settle on something to get me started, you know, to give myself a base. And it came with a little shop below, and Kington is on the Opherstyke Trail, a national trail that walks along the border from South Wales up to Prestatyn. And I thought, well, I'll open my house up, a little flat above the shop, as a bed and breakfast. And then I decided to do a little shop below for walkers. So my life for the last 7 years, really, like Teresa said, my whole livelihood is based on walking. And it's just been this amazing experience, really, which I've managed to sort of create a business that really reflects me and my, you know, what I want to do with myself. And so I have to sort of live up to these expectations too through my business. And yeah, I suppose that's a little bit about how I arrived here.
Brilliant. So I just wonder if you can maybe take us back to kind of your diagnosis journey and sort of, I guess, how that impacted your movement. And I guess the follow-on to that is how you then kind of kept moving or restarted moving.
Yeah, so it was a long time ago, so it's kind of hard to remember, and you tend to blank out the bad bits because actually, I think it was pretty bad in the beginning. And I don't know whether it is for everyone. And really, I'd be interested. I want to know all your stories. It's just amazing to have you all here listening. But I think it's a time where your body is just being sort of ravaged by this. It's just taking hold on your body, and there's lots of changes happening. So I remember it being pretty bad. And like I said, I was a very active person. I just had my son, and I remember I was just sort of getting back into running again after having my son. And I noticed my toes were hurting, and I thought, well, that's interesting. I was taking lots of ibuprofen and stuff and continuing on. And then I noticed one day when I was, like I said, I worked as a community nurse. They call it home care over there. And I remember knocking on the door of this patient's house, and I thought, oh, my knuckle hurts. And I looked at my hand, and it was like, you know, my finger was a big old sausage. I thought, well, that's interesting. And I thought, well, that can't be. I thought I'd just been running too much with my feet, but I thought, well, that's interesting. That's my hands. That's got nothing to do with my feet. And then it was pretty rapid from there. All these different bits started hurting, and I kind of knew instantly what it was, but it took a while to get into to see the doctor and to get that confirmation. But yeah, I did know what it was, and yeah, it was hard to pick up my son. It was hard to even lift my arms above my head, actually. I remember my husband having to help me in the shower to wash my hair. So it was pretty hard. But to be honest, I don't remember ever thinking that it was going to limit me. I don't remember feeling worried that I was going to be stuck with this for life, or that it was going to limit me. It was interesting. I don't remember feeling that. That's perhaps just my personality, really, I suppose. So what was your next question? Well, that's sort of the beginning.
So I guess how you, from after kind of diagnosis, how you then managed to kind of have the motivation to keep moving, but you've sort of answered that in the fact that you didn't want to let it kind of stop you.
Yeah, and, you know, back then, because we are talking, I think it's 27 years ago, the message back then from the doctors was rest and anti-inflammatories. You know, I don't remember anything about, in fact, I was told not to walk and do anything. You know, I needed to rest up. And if I'd have listened to, you know, them back then, I wouldn't be doing what I was doing now. But I think I think I must have decreased my activities. I must have done, because I was feeling, obviously feeling it. But I mean, even after diagnosis, I remember thinking, oh, I've got to do something here. And I remember signing up for a marathon after I was diagnosed with it and trying to get sponsorships for. I thought, I know, I'll get some money up for the Rheumatoid Arthritis Association, whatever it is in the States. So that's always my mentality, to always sort of push myself and push through it. I didn't actually do the marathon. I don't know why now, but I remember feeling that. I suppose the big turning point in my life was when I decided to do a big walk. So my father had just died. My mum had already died quite a while back, and my dad had died, and I was feeling very disconnected from the UK, and because the family home had been sold in London. And I was trying to find a way to reconnect. And I thought, I know, I'll go over there and do a long walk. And I thought I was doing something very unique, because back then, I guess I was just part of this growing trend of long distance walkers, you know, but I didn't realise I was. And so I decided to come and walk in, you know, do a long trip, a bit of a pilgrimage back here, I suppose. And so I told my doctors this, and they're like, well, you can't possibly do that. You know, you've got... your feet are just, you need joint replacements in all your toes, you'll get stress fractures, you know, you can't do that walk. So I was like, well, of course I can, you know, well, I'm going to try it. I just came over here, and I was limping, and I did think, oh, this is ridiculous. But I thought, well, you know, I've set myself this mission, and I had all these sort of blog followers, so I thought, well, I've got to follow through with this now, people are expecting me to do it. And I had this sort of plan to do Land's End to John O'Groats. It was just sort of a vague sort of a plan to go up. Then I set off from Land's End. I'm limping, you know, carrying this big backpack. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. But I just put one foot in front of the other. And before I knew it, I was at my destination 10 miles later. And I thought, I can't possibly walk the next day. You know, that was just a fluke. I just managed to do that out of sheer persistence, you know. And so I got up the next day, and I did it the next day, and I did it the next day. And the more I walked, the better I got. And I was like, wow, there must be something in this. You know, I'm walking, and I've sort of come to realize, I think one of my big issues for a long time actually was my subtalar joint, which is the joint that kind of does your sideways motion on your feet. Your ankle does sort of up and down, and your subtalar does side to side. And and it felt like, and I'm sure a lot of you out here can identify with this, when I stood up in the morning, it just felt like I was standing on a load of shards of glass. You know, when I bared weight down on my foot, and it just seemed ridiculous that I could do this walk. But as I walked, I think, and this is my interpretation of it, although I have said this to the doctor and they sort of nodded in agreement that was possibly what was happening, but I felt like as I walked, my circulation started, you know, I got my circulation going, and all those lovely sort of juices that come with that came into my joint that was bone on bone. That's why it was feeling that, and it lifted off, and I went from being sort of a cripple limping around to being this absolutely fine walker. And I think that was, like I said, it was a big revelation to me, because I thought, well, maybe people don't ever walk long enough to get over this hump. You know, you stop because it hurts, and you're told by Western medicine that if it hurts, stop. And so that was a big thing to me. I thought, well, what else can I do if I can do this? What else do I not know through this? So that was really a transformative thing for me. I thought, well, if I can do that, what else can I do?
Take any adaptions for the RA?
Can I what?
Did you use different kit, or did you change anything because of having RA?
No, I didn't at all. I knew that I needed some comfortable boots, and I did what I could at that point to get boots. I have really got a lot further through that journey in terms of my feet. I mean, now I would say absolutely yes, because I've discovered so many more things that can help, and it really makes a difference. You know, when you've got an issue with your body, or just aging in general, you know, your kit becomes even more crucial. That's why I love this. Oh, I didn't really explain in my little intro that I had also, well, I had also set up this shop that's really grown and morphed over the years into really, well, I carefully curate all my products. I'm very passionate about the brands that I have, and they have to follow a very sort of strict criteria of being sustainable, and you know, I want to know where the manufacturers, who manufactures, and all that kind of thing, and that they do what they're supposed to do. So I don't offer a lot of choice. I really sort of curate the products, but also they're for freedom of movement. I really believe that your body needs to function as intended. You need to give it the best opportunity to work. And so much of what we wear, especially on our feet, is crippling that ability to do that. It's stopping and us more than anything. I mean, what I really have learned through having RA is that it's even more important for us to keep strong. You know, our body is an amazing self-healer, and if you allow it to do what it needs to do, it will compensate for the bits that don't work. And my joints are still rubbish. I mean, you know, look at my hands, and my feet look very much like my hands, as Claire Boarding like described on that Ramblings, which is quite funny. My feet have got really strong, and my body is strong, and I trust in myself and believe in myself, and that goes a long way as well. And that it's everything has risen up to compensate for the joints. I mean, if you think about someone that's born without a limb, they don't know that they don't have that limb. You know, they just get on with life. And I think that's what I've really tried to do with my RA as well, is not be a victim of it, not be identified by my disease, but you know, and not be a victim of it, and to make it work for me. And this might sound a little trite, and I know we're all in different, I'm sure, you know, all of you out there in different levels of having this thing, and different situations to fit the disease into, but I just feel like it's taught me so much. It's allowed me to question things I perhaps wouldn't have questioned without this. You know, I feel like I'm only here having this amazing life right now, sort of inspiring, hopefully, and to people to walk and to keep moving, because I've got this thing. I perhaps wouldn't be doing it if I didn't. You know, I wouldn't realize and appreciate my body so much as I do now, because I've had to work through all these things and question common convention. So, so in terms of my kit, I have really found lots of things that can help. So my first sort of delving into this was the Nordic walking. Like you said, Teresa, I hit upon Nordic walking pretty early over here. We have a walking festival twice a year in Kington. It's very much a walking town because it's on the path. And that's what attracted me to it. And they had this Nordic walking taster session. I was like, what's that? I mean, I'm a skier, right? So I was very interested in Nordic walking. That sounds interesting. And I did this session and just took to it straight away, just because I'm used to using poles. And I was like, wow, this is great. And ended up becoming an instructor myself. And over the years, it's really morphed from taking the principles of Nordic walking. I still do that very much, the principles, which is about posture and correct walking technique, which is really important, even more important if you have issues, really looking at form and how you do it. I've just totally lost my train of thought where I was going with that. Sorry. This is the problem. I sort of waffle off. So I haven't actually expressed all this stuff out to the world. So I feel like I have lots to say, but it's all in my head. And I was actually quite worried today about coming on because I thought, am I going to be able to articulate this in a good way that actually is beneficial? So
doing brilliant. You're doing brilliant.
Okay, thank you. I was talking about the kit, wasn't I? So the Nordic walking was a big part of my progression because having a couple of, so I, when I did my long walk, for instance, I walked with one stick, right? And I really loved it, but I would never do that now. Terrible idea. One stick becomes a crutch, right? You want two poles that puts you into the right posture and that you're actually using you to propel you forward rather than leaning on them. And so two pots supposedly take 75% off your lower extremities. So if you have issues with your knees and your feet, it's fantastic because it can really, really help with, with taking the stress off your joints, off your lower extremity joints. Because, of course, you've got your upper body now working for you. It's not just your lower body walking. You're getting your whole upper body in there as well. Your big arm muscles and anything that gets you flowing freely, as that does, is fantastic. So absolutely, poles have been a huge addition to my life. And the teaching of Nordic walking, like I said, has really made me progress my thoughts on body mechanics and form and posture and understand the importance of that. It's important for anyone that's aging, really, to look at how we do it. When we're younger, we can get away with doing anything, you know, and in any way we want. But as we get older, we really need to look at how we're doing it and do things better, slow it down and have just much better technique. So the poles, really big. And then footwear. So absolutely massive for everyone, because as you get older, we've been stuck in these terrible shoes for all of our life. And it's taken a toll on our feet. And especially if you have foot problems, as a lot of us probably do with our joints, you need to allow your foot to do what it needs to do. And the shoes will prevent that. So a regular shoe, a conventional shoe, even if it's wide enough for our foot, tapers on the front. So it squishes our toes. And our toes want to spread out as we walk. Those are a big part of the function of our foot. And our foot wants to do lots of things. Our foot has 27 joints in it, 33 bones, or the other way around, something like that. And it wants to do all these lovely things, but it's stuck in a shoe, so it can't do that. And when you have problems as well with your foot, you know, you need, like I was saying earlier, you need to give your body the best ability to function. And so you need your foot to be able to do all the things that it needs to do. You don't want it thrown onto a particular part of your foot that might be problematic anyway. And in the case of a conventional shoe with a little heel, all shoes put you up on a heel, it throws you forward onto your toe joints and the ball of your foot that's often really bad. And you want to be a barefoot shoe. I've probably leapt forward. So I'm into barefoot shoes or minimalist shoes.
This actually answers one of the questions we've just had from the audience, actually, because somebody's asked about whether you wear orthotics. Yeah. And I'm quite interested in this because I've been kind of put forward for orthotics. I've been using orthotics for running, but I don't use them outside of running. And I, as I mentioned to you earlier this week, I've just bought my first pair of barefoot shoes. So I've always been intrigued. And your BBC Sounds interview or Ramblings, or I can't remember what it was, kind of inspired me to finally take the leap. So this is great. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I mean, you're making your first steps down this route, which is really great. So Orthotics, yes. Yeah, so orthotics are going to make you feel better. I mean, all of our feet are different. In some cases, orthotics might be the answer. If that's the, honestly, to be honest, whatever makes you walk is brilliant. And if the orthotics make you walk, then that's great. But there is a better solution, because the orthotics is a bit like a Band-Aid. That's an American word. A sticking plaster. There you go. And it's typical Western medicine way of doing things, right? It's like, well, let's give you something to make you feel better. It's like giving a pill. It's a bit like going to the doctor with gastric reflux or whatever, and they don't ask about what you've been eating. They just give you a pill to deal with the reflux. Well, an orthotic will certainly make you feel better. You know, if your arches are dropping, if you need support, they're going to look at how your gait is and they're going to give you the correct gait. So yes, that's probably going to make you feel better. But to me, there's a simpler way of doing that. And it's about, first of all, letting your foot function, because you don't realize that your foot hasn't been functioning. We just don't know it. We've just been stuck in these shoes and given these shoes, and we're not aware of our feet at all. So I'm really passionate about getting this big awareness in our feet and how important they are. They're our connection with the ground, and everything comes from our feet, really. And, you know, your... So better still than having something put you in the right place, allow your foot, allow your whole foot to function. So if your foot goes flat, it's a bit like the analogy I'll give you. You know, if your foot goes flat, your weight is distributed over your whole foot correctly. If you're up on a heel, you know, you're only on a part of your foot. And of course, your foot is going to function much better if you allow it to function in the way it's intended, right? To all those joints to work. And it will build and grow strong in the correct way. So most of these issues are because we haven't used our feet, so they become very weak in the process. And a lot of them can be solved just by building the muscles and ligaments and tendons. Just because we have rheumatoid arthritis doesn't mean to say there's anything wrong with the rest of us, right? We have a whole, our muscular system, our ligaments, and our tendons, those are all really strong, and we need to be strengthening them even more than someone that doesn't have issues, right? We need to strengthen these parts of us. So, and in order to do that, you've got to, I know I keep on saying it, but allow your body to function as intended. And all I can say is that if you go into a barefoot shoe that really makes it you feel like you're walking in bare feet, that's why they call them barefoot shoes, right? There's nothing there to impede the function of your foot. You'll find that bits of your foot will start to compensate for the issues, and you'll start to get stronger. So it's always worth doing that first. Explore what you've got, first of all. Because we don't realise that we're not using our feet at all. You know, they're just cramped. So does that answer that question about the orthotics? And
Janet, does that answer your question? Oh, hold on, I'll ask you to unmute. You're still on mute.
Yeah.
Where are you?
Oh, yes, you thank you, Ali. I must admit, because I'm going to orthotics or to have my feet measured next week.
Yeah.
And it's something that, as I say, I appreciate what you're saying. I used to love walking barefoot. There was nothing more. It was just like giving my feet this lovely stretch, this real nice feeling. And then sadly, when the RA hit quite badly, you know, walking was pretty difficult. And I was literally getting lumps underneath the arch of my foot. So I was like on a rocker. And as I say, they've tried various things. And I did put another question about reflexology, because I was just trying anything to try and get the blood flow or movement. But I still love walking barefoot now, but just around the house maybe, because I'm interested. I've written down barefoot shoes. I've not heard of them before. So that's something I'll be Googling later. But I think the orthotic, it was to give me, I thought, that little bit of support to give me confidence maybe to walk. Because I do enjoy walking, I miss walking at a distance, because I think it's confidence, you know, again, it's this building of confidence, and my feet going to let me down to the point, you know, I'll get so far out, but I can't get back.
Sorry.
No, and that's it. I think I'm just trying to think, if I go next week to these orthotics, it's do I want to start going down that route and then become dependent on them, like you say, about a crutch even?
Yeah.
or, you know, so I'm not trying to knock the NHS that they're trying to help me. And I don't want to refuse because I've waited ages for an appointment.
Well, I think it's whatever, like I said, it's whatever you need right now for your personal journey and whatever gives you confidence. And I've been through all these things too. And it is a journey and you dip in and out of it. I think my thing is to set a seed that there is an option. And I think you could do both of them right now. Go that route, get the orthotics, and you can even have a barefoot shoe is a bit of a blank slate for an orthotic to go in, because I've often wondered why foot doctors don't really pick up on barefoot shoes, even if they are sort of the common convention. Now, this is still a bit fringe, this whole barefoot movement, but it's really growing in, it's really growing out there because of, you know, our growing understanding of body mechanics and how we use our bodies more, you know, so it's, and I honestly think that give it 5 years, another 5 years. And I think barefoot footwear is really going to be the new health kind of question, like diet is now. I think it's just that we haven't given our feet any awareness at all. We've been beholden to the fashion industry, and this is about being aware. So you could take the orthotic and put it into a barefoot shoe, which still allows your toes to spread and allows your foot that flatness, you know, or so a barefoot shoe, let me see, I show, look, I've got one right here. This is a brand called Freet.
Freet, how are you spelling that?
F-R-E-E-T. Yeah. Old battered things right here. Obviously, right. They look a lot nicer in my shop. So I sell them in my shop, right? I mean, I've completely... Okay. So all the shoes in my shop are foot-shaped to start off with. So my mission is to educate people really on comfort footwear and to persuade people out of needing these really heavy leather boots for walking. That's where I started. Or it wasn't necessarily where I started, but I... it was definitely about getting people out of the big heavy leather boots that we've been sort of conditioned to believe we need, this real kind of protection.
The soul. The
I'm about connection, really. That connection with the ground is really important. But now I've definitely morphed even further over to the whole barefoot thing in general. And I get people from all over, from all sorts of different, coming into this from all sorts of different issues. So I get a lot of people with having fall issues coming into my shop. So it's more from sort of a very much a walking booty sort of issue, just a sort of general sort of mobility issues. But a barefoot shoe really has sort of three things to it, which is a very square toe box. It's hard. If I had a regular shoe, you'd be able to see more. And it's more about the big toe going straight, because a lot of them have the width, but then they taper, and putting that pressure on your toes. And you can imagine if your toes are pressed, they can't do that. It can't do that movement of the foot. And if you do the movement of the foot, you put your heel down first and you roll through your foot and you then sort of bounce off the front of your foot. And your toes naturally want to spread with that. If they can't, you're instantly limiting what the rest of your foot does, because we don't move in isolation. So that's an important thing, the square toe box.
Well, do you know, it's nice to see that, Emily, because I remember when I was young, when I was little, Mum used to take me to get my feet measured at the Clark shoe shop. And you used to have them measured, and then a strap, and I used to have wide feet. They'd always say, oh, she's an E-fitting, or, you know, the widest they had in the shop. And obviously, that's just my foot. That's who I am. But I think then, sadly, as you say, as I got older, so I never forget once going for a job, and it was almost, well, yes, but we need you to wear heels.
Oh,
and
I know. I just heard that the other day.
I'm so appalled. And this was going back a bit. We're talking 80s, 90s, but it was still, I remember being in a lot of pain thinking, well, why? And I'm sure I had it then in my feet, but I didn't realise. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It was already perhaps apparent. But that was part of the uniform. You have to wear heels.
So I think what people don't realise is that all shoes have a heel. You know, all shoes raise you up, because the shoe industry now realises we're all used to that. And of course, trainers these days, I mean, it sort of goes in and out of trend, but now they're these huge cushioning, you know, huge cushions underfoot. And it's an easy sell, and it's a marketing tool, because they can add things. They've got to think of things to sell their shoes and it looks good, right? And it's all bells and whistles to add to the marketing campaign. But actually, I like to ask my customers, well, would you rather balance on top of a cushion or on the floor? You know, when you do Pilates and yoga, right, you're in bare feet. We know intuitively that bare feet is the best position to be in for balance. And but then we go and do this class and we're in bare feet. We feel great. And then we go and put these shoes on and we don't realise that we're instantly readjusting what we've adjusted.
Yeah,
so the barefoot shoe is completely flat, what they call zero drop. So it puts you flat on the ground, which is really important, like I said, for really getting your weight over the top of your foot, really how we want to be very balanced and allowing your whole foot to function.
Yeah.
If you're up a little bit, it can only be just a millimetre. You're weighted to the front. You're weighted there and cramped. Yeah.
Thank you, Ali. I will try it. I still go ahead with you, you know, the orthotic measurement, but I'll try it. I think it's experiment again, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Experiment around with it and what's comfortable. Yeah. And this is a transition anyway, you know, because you've got to build some strength. You will get, your feet will get stronger. It doesn't, because you're actually, your foot's getting a workout in it. So you've got to build that strength. Mm. But I'm sort of surprised that, so, you know, they'll make these lovely orthotics for you and then you'll go and put them in a shoe, which sort of totally changes the use of orthotic. But in a shoe like this, you know, you can at least get the benefits of the orthotic.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't know those existed. And I must admit, I do yoga and I wear like yoga socks, you know, with the little straps across. And it's lovely because I can just balance, go up on the balls of my feet now. And I feel okay to do that. So it's that connection again to Mother Earth.
So another thing, toe socks.
Oh, yes.
So once you get your barefoot shoe with the space to spread out into, the toe sock is just amazing because it lets you spread into that. It's such it's such a simple thing. Honestly, it's a really simple, I think my message is very simple. It's just about strengthening the rest of you, not giving up on the rest of you, right? And when you get that, when you get these small successes, it's amazing for your confidence. And then you're off, you know, you're off and running. Yeah. And this isn't, RA is not a death. It's not, you know, there's so much you can do with it. And and I do realize we're all different and this is my story and it's not going to be everyone's story, but it's just, for me, it's just been really amazing. Just sort of, I suppose I've just understood so much more about I feel I'm a better person, to be honest, through it.
It's a learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah,
like
it's
you
a challenge.
Sharing information. And you try
we all have something, right? And I'd rather have RA than other stuff. I'd rather have RA than cancer or, you know. So if I'm going to have something, and this almost feels like something I can sort of get a grip of too. I think the diagnosis is important because it's a starting point, isn't it? When you get that, it's like, okay, you've got something now that's known. And you can then work on that and start.
Yeah.
But it really is a journey and just about bringing everything in. And sometimes, you know, you get information, you think, oh, that's interesting, but that's not me. You know, I wouldn't do that. But it's something that's gone in and then maybe you hear it from someone else and you hear it from someone else, different channels. And then you slowly start to adopt these things. And I think it's much better to do it that way anyway, a much more sort of organic, slower journey through various things. But our bodies are really amazing, and often it's self-limiting beliefs that prevent us from really, you know, reaching our full potential. And you know, if we can really throw caution to the wind, like Teresa, you started with that sort of intro, and that is very much, you know, my mantra is just to always push that envelope just a little bit further. And I think that's a real, I've come to believe that's also the answer to aging as well, because I think as you get older, you stop doing that. When you're young, you're always doing new things, always. But as you get older, you get smaller and smaller in belief of what you can do. And I think if you always think you can do that a little bit more, you know, it's always good to have that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Quite a few questions from in the chat.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's probably